And you should elegantly be touching base with them and saying, hey, would you mind if we stayed in touch? We don't have anything today, but we believe this is who you could become if you came to us and just spent 3 years here. And here's the upside to you. And listen, if you ever want to chat, do me a favor, keep an eye on our LinkedIn profile from a company. And by the way, feel free to reach out to me at any time. You get 3 to 5 of those 100 hires over a few year period. It changes the game dramatically.
This is the Rebel HR Podcast, the podcast where we talk to HR innovators about all things people leadership. If you're looking for places to find about new ways to think about the world of work, this is the podcast for you. Please subscribe from your favorite podcast listening platform today and leave us a review. Rebel on, HR Rebels. All right, Rebel HR listeners, really excited for our guest today. It is Joe Mullings, the chairman and CEO of the Mullings Group. He's been building companies and careers since 1989. He founded and is chairman and CEO of the Mullings Group, the world's leading search firm in the medical device industry. He's responsible for more than 7,000 successful searches with more than 600 companies in the medical device industry. So he's got a little bit of experience. Some of his clients you may have heard of, places like, you know, small upstarts like Johnson & Johnson and Google and Medtronic and so on and so forth. Recently has been appointed the chief visionary officer of MRI Networks, one of the executive search firms that I have used and the third largest executive recruitment firm with 400 offices worldwide. So welcome to the show, Joe.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And I love the title of this, Rebel, right? So that means we're gonna rile things up rather than be old school.
That's right. We try to shake things up. Although, you know, I do tell people it's kind of an oxymoronic title, right? Like putting rebel and human resources in the same title is, it's like, you know, it just naturally makes people uncomfortable, but we're all about shaking things up. So I think we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Hashtag goals. Let's do it.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. So I think, you know, what I really like to do is I like to ask my guests, okay, how did you get into the space you're in? And obviously, certainly a recruiting expert. So what brought you into the world of recruiting?
Yeah. So nobody gets into the world of recruiting by design. Usually it's a crossroads, right? You either went bankrupt or you got fired or you were in between gigs. And in my case, I went to school for engineering, worked as an engineer for a couple of years, also had another business on the side that ended up being very successful. I sold it off and I just took some time off. And I had lived on a boat with my golden retriever. Went back into a friend of the family's office who was a headhunter and said, listen, his name was Sebastian Lavolsi. I said, Sebastian, listen, I'm looking for a job. This is what I want. And after he spoke with me for 2 hours, he said, did you ever think about headhunting? I said, not really, but what did your top salesperson make last year? He told me, I said, I'm starting, let's go. And that was December 4th, 1989. So anybody that's sitting across the desk from a headhunter who owns an office or a manager probably is in some sort of major transition in their life. Mm-hmm. Now, today it's a lot more of, that was December 4th, 1989, like I mentioned. But now we've got people coming out of university coming in because it's an entirely different business these days than the old call center, you know, phone time, number of phone calls, and sort of telemarketing. So it's a much different profession today.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective, and I have not worked for a recruiting firm. I've done a lot of recruiting, so I'm kind of in the customer seat. But it has been really interesting, you know, over the last few decades as I've been interacting with these firms. I remember, you know, when I was first getting into the career, it was like a meat market, right? Like, here you go. Here, I'm going to give you like 10, you tell me what you like, you know, whatever, if you don't like them, whatever, we'll go find more. And now it's like, you know, at least I would say the successful ones, it's much more about the fit, the match, the quality. And I would say my feeling is, it's a much more selective process than it used to be. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, it's that too. But so dynamics of technology have certainly changed things. But as an example, so our firm is about 30 people. We've certainly got our headhunters, but we also have a very large marketing department. We've got a 5,000 square foot media studio. We've got a full-time rock star programmer. We've got research teams, we've got sales operation teams. And so out of those 30 employees, I think only 12 are headhunters. And so, you know, the upper echelon organizations have emerged building businesses that now happen to be search firms versus a search firm. And those are the ones that also are getting involved in consulting, also are getting involved in venture capital. So while granted, it's probably only 5% of the market, that is where the industry is moving to with certain individuals who have that taste for growth.
No, that's fascinating. And I'm sure you're kind of on the front edge of some of the, you know, kind of the HR tech solutions that are coming out. You know, we've had a couple experts on here about, you know, the HR tech space and, you know, AI and how is that going to impact. So I got to believe that you get to see some of this stuff firsthand. So what does the future of recruiting look like for you?
Well, the one thing that won't ever change is the deal is done on the telephone, but with the sort of onslaught of technology, the telephone used to be the first point of contact for search. Now it's still as important, but it's moved further down the line in regards to activities. So you see, especially on something like LinkedIn, you can build a brand in there. So most headhunters, if they're any good, end up becoming subject matter experts, but only on the telephone amongst the 500 to 700 candidates or people they talk to on a monthly basis. Well, what if you took that subject matter expertise and developed it and exhibited it online to tens of thousands of people instead of the few hundred, and to the tens of thousands of people who don't even know you yet? So that's where it's changed a lot. The best headhunters have become a voice of their industry on a platform like LinkedIn, which drives inbound business from both a candidate perspective and a client perspective that has that industry say, okay, like our firm, the Mullings Group, I don't think we've made an outbound marketing call in 7 or 8 years. It's all been inbound business. So that's where it's changed. But you know, you mentioned something earlier, AI. I have no confidence that AI is going to deliver a meaningful solution in the skilled above $120,000 a year talent pool anytime soon. And what I mean that is that at least I can only see out about 5 years. So, you know, AI, people still write resumes for human beings, right? So AI, if you follow AI at all, a special narrow AI is what we're talking about here. The only way the algorithm gets really good is by having a massive data set to train itself on. So there's not a massive data set of resumes and the nuances and particulars in resumes that you can apply AI to in the job field. And then where the courting process usually goes awry in HR or any process is the human interaction. So you could give me all the well served up, let's make a hallucination and say AI could deliver candidates on your doorstep. You put C, C++, embedded real-time systems, UI, UX, Python in Des Moines, Iowa. Well, you might get 10 or 15 resumes. I don't think so, but let's just say in Des Moines, Iowa. Well, usually where it falls off is the human interaction. The internal process in organizations have not been properly set up from everything from, I know we're going to talk about this today, to engagement, description of who the person's going to become when they come to the company. Instead, they get told what are the requirements to work here. And then the courting process itself, typically way too many stakeholders who are all over the place and not paying enough mind to taking that individual through the journey. And then salary negotiations, probably the weakest point in any, especially today in this day and age, the weakest point in any part of the process that gets fumbled all the time. And then the onboarding. So AI on resumes are only the front end challenge that is not going to be threatened anytime soon. But then it's the engagement with the other human beings.
Absolutely. And I know my listeners can, they're probably just sitting here thinking of how many stories this has occurred, but you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had a great candidate. I've had the kind of that connection and, you know, the feeling on the goosebumps on the back of your neck, like, okay, this is it. This is the person. This is the right candidate. We just found this person. And then they go talk to somebody and they're out. And, just like that. they had a bad interaction. I don't know. Somebody was having a bad day. Somebody took an aggressive interview stance, and now you're like picking up the pieces of this great candidate, and you're like, great, I guess we're starting over again. Let's delay this process another 3 weeks to just see if we can get another candidate that was that good, you know? So yeah, I'm with you on that. And I don't know how AI understands the intricacies of human behavior, at least not in, like you said, like not in the near future, maybe.
Oh, wild card. First of all, the AI is not going to work on resumes because people are, again, not writing resumes for an algorithm. They're writing them for the human eye interpretation. So therefore, you can't train an algorithm as effectively to say this is a good candidate, because you know we're also moving into an area that emotional and intellectual agility is going to end up being even more valuable than skill sets, because you're going to have to reinvent yourself every 5 to 10 years at the breakneck pace of technology today. So, you know, how do you interview for that? Who is interviewing for that?
Oh, that's a great point. I love that term, emotional and intellectual agility, because I mean, if the last 2 years are are a testament to how quickly the world can change, and it just takes, you know, one catalyst to change the entire nature of the workforce for the majority of workers. You know, great example of that. I tend to agree. You know, it reminds me of the, you know, I have these conversations with educational institutions who are, you know, they're, you know, trying to figure out, okay, what do you want in a candidate? What can we teach someone? You know, what skills can we teach someone? And you ask me and you ask any other HR professional, it's not like, oh, I need him to, you know, score X on this assessment. The skills are, I need him to be emotionally intelligent. I need him to be able to communicate. I need them to be adaptable. I need to be able to learn, you know, those sorts of things. That's what matters today. And if somebody's got those things, then you can teach them many of the technical skills to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, that's true. Look, there's a majority of everybody wants to point and say, well, what about a doctor and what about a surgeon and what about an airline pilot? And sure, there are absolutely careers and roles that require a high level of training and precision training in order to execute on the job with very specific protocols. And usually they're in highly regulated environments. But a majority of the workforce really needs in its core competency what you just said. Because it's rare that an industry and or a sector is not going to be dynamically turned over 180 degrees on a regular basis, whether you have a pandemic or not. Because that rate of acceleration of technology is just flipping everything over. And so the biggest concern is those who do not have that emotional agility in order to say, granted, I just spent 5 years learning something to be A, but now it's got to be B. There's a reasonable percentage of the population that eventually is going to get frustrated or have not been taught how to reinvent themselves and have not been taught that it's something they should look forward to and are going to punt. And I'm afraid that those people are going to be left in the rearview mirror.
Absolutely. This episode is brought to you by Namely. The last few years have changed the way we work forever. 2022 will be no exception. At-home workforces, internal mobility, and team community will continue to evolve and be more important than ever. That's why you need Namely, the all-in-one HR solution that offers everything you need to set you up for success in the new year, so you can meet the new HR trends of 2022 head on. Namely's all about service. And let me tell you, I've had a lot of poor service experiences with HRIS. Let me tell you that Namely is here to change that. They help you easily adapt to the ever-changing workplace and maintain a great experience for the entire employee lifecycle, with onboarding, performance management, and intuitive benefits enrollment all on one connected platform. Plus, Namely can streamline your payroll, time tracking, and vacation requests, whether you have 50 or 1,000 employees. So you can be everybody's favorite innovative HR leader, no matter how your company grows. This new year, don't just keep up, get ahead. Learn more about making the switch to Namely today at Namely.com. Don't wait, that's Namely.com. Happy New Year, Rebels. I want to dive into a couple topics here. You mentioned this earlier as we were kind of talking about the, you know, what you see for the future of recruiting, and that is kind of that courting process. And, you know, I know you've seen it from all sides. Obviously, you've got a broad broad array of candidates that you've seen in your career, and you're, you know, obviously building the structures for success of recruiting. So as you're going through that process, I think the first question that I have is, what do the successful companies do to win those candidates that they really want consistently?
The first thing is, if you got to start your hiring narrative before you need any of those people. So, you know, most of the time hiring will look at a 60-day window on who's available, and then it's a fire drill. What if you thought longitudinally and said, okay, the same way you sit down at the end of the year and you talk about what's our budget for equipment, what's our budget for the sales group, what's our budget for the finance team, right? Well, what is our budget from both a tactical, economic, and spend on bringing in talent? And what are the 4 or 40 positions or 100 positions that we're bringing in? And then what is our company's hiring brand? And I don't mean the product brand or the service brand, but does your organization have an ongoing narrative that will declare who will a person become once they come to your company? That's what people are asking themselves at the core all the time, whether they're looking for a significant other, a spouse, whether they're joining a club, joining a team. One of the top things they're asking themselves is, who am I going to become when I become associated with these people? So very few companies put that hiring narrative out there. And then you've got to lay that hiring narrative down over a long period of time. And that starts the courting process. The courting process is you marketing who that person may become by authentically saying, this is our company. These are the type of people who do well here. And by the way, stay tuned. Watch us like we're a network TV show, because over the next year, we're going to be looking to hire these kind of positions. Now, somebody grabs their Diet Coke and their bag of chips and starts watching. And you most of the time, you want the A players. You don't want the people who are going to be available, who are looking for a job all the time, or happen, you know, lightning strikes and they happen to be available at the moment you've got the posting out for a product manager. So that's the first thing, is you start courting before you even know the person who's showing up for your job. Then you need to make sure that all of the stakeholders, once the person does engage, you make sure all the stakeholders understand what is important to the person that they're trying to attract to their team. And I use those words on purpose rather than interview. Because in this market and the market moving forward, if you're not able to understand the, you know, we don't have to go down to Maslow's, you know, needs, but you can still use that as a reference point, is what is this person looking for? What are they running away from? And what are they running towards? And then you've got to make sure the head of sales, the head of supply chain, the head of operations, the head of engineering, all are able to explain what that position means to them in their role, not all interviewing off of the same sort of template. And don't toss in behavioral-based interviewing and all these other fancy, ridiculous things that millions of dollars are spent on. Be a human being and understand and say, listen, as it applies to sales, this is really what this position means to me. Here's the top three problems I'm trying to solve in sales. The ops person will say, here's the top three problems I'm trying to solve relative to this. And give that person a chance to articulate what they've done that either matches or rides up right alongside of what they're looking for.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, we're living up to the name. We're going to start dogging on behavioral-based interviewing.
Biggest scam of all time. Somebody made so much money on that red pill, blue pill mentality that occurs in corporate America today.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Well, we're going to dive down that rabbit hole, but I want to circle back to something that you said, because I think it's the first time that I've heard it articulated this way, and I want our listeners to really grasp this. The question, who will they become? You know, and thinking in terms, I mean, you kind of rewired how I think about it a little bit. Because you always think about, okay, what's your employer value proposition, right? And you think about, okay, here's your product, here's your culture, you know, and it's but that's very focused on the company. It's not focused on your target market and that the journey that a candidate would take with you if they were to even be interested in working for your company, right? So I think that that's a really profound way to think about it. I haven't really thought about it that way.
And also let's be real and stop making believe that we have lifelong employees. Mm. Why don't we say, listen, Carl, you're probably going to spend 4 years here. And if we do our job, we will have helped you become way overqualified for the role that you're applying for or you're thinking about coming here for. Mm. And in those 4 years, it falls on us to be able to create another role or clearly show you a pathway forward. And if not, if you leave here in 4 years because either you've outgrown us or you've grown so rapidly there is not one here for you, these are the skills you're going to walk away with. And Carl, by the way, these skills are going to be so marketable 4 years from now because this is where the industry is moving, right? Give Carl that to think about when Carl goes home, not the requirements, 4+ years experience, BS degree, must be able to pick up a package more than 50 pounds, right? I mean, that is what 90% of corporate America is putting out on their job postings. And I understand that there are certain compliance parameters you have to work within, but that should be the fine print. That should not be the cut and paste that is put on nearly every single job posting that corporations put out. Put a little time in, please.
Yeah, is that really too much to ask to actually think about what you're communicating when you advertise something?
Yeah, what are you willing to bet your life on? And that's, you've got to put that level of thought into it, and it will change your win rate, and it will more importantly change those who eventually lean in and have been watching your organization for 6 months, 9 months, 12 months online. By the way, there's this place called LinkedIn that's pretty free that is in your workplace that you should be telling stories industry-wide every single week, if not every single day, about here's who you will become when you come to work here. And yeah. Again, for every old shoe, there's a sock.
Yeah.
And if you tell the story rather than put out job postings, and then finally, hey, here's something called social media. That means be social. Engage with the market. Engage with the audience.
I love that. And I think it's, you know, this is you know, kind of hitting on the other point that you made, which is, listen, this is not an employer's market. I mean, if you think that you can go out and say, you know, look at my brand, it's so great, you should be, you know, you should be thankful that you even got an interview here, or, you know, something along those lines. I mean, you're dreaming. I'll tell you a story of an email that I literally just received. I think it was last week, maybe the week prior, and it was for an employer who shall remain nameless, but they're one of the largest employers in the world. Hey, we've got this HR opening. It was clearly like a bot, right? You know, that's just like finding somebody on LinkedIn with a, you know, human resources in their title. You know, you have to work at this location or this location or this location. You must be available. If you've ever interviewed with us before, you are not eligible for an interview. and you know what I read in that email? I'm like, oh, you're just a bunch of jerks. Right? I don't want to work for this company.
Imagine a high-end player, a top 1% are going, my God, that convinced me.
Yeah, I know. It's like, and you know what? But you know what they did have in the email? They had this really, really high dollar figure. You can make this much money. And you know what? I mean, to go back to your other point, if you're an A player, are you going to go work for a jerk of a boss just for the money?
No,
probably not.
No, you won't. You won't. No. And again, this is where you get the fatigue and the exhaustion, and most postings honestly have become white noise in everybody's inbox. So, you know, that is dropping off the effectiveness of those, other than getting somebody who can fog a mirror. You are not going to get game changers with those strategies that have not changed much.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that uses the term mirror fogger, but, you know, I'm with you. All right. So I want to, now you really got me going. Now I'm starting to get irritated because I'm remembering all these things back in, like, you know, that I'm like, why are we doing it this way? Mm-hmm. Another company, one of the companies I used to work for, massive player. When I came out of college, it's kind of like recruiting, like HR found me. They didn't even have, like, HR wasn't a degree when I went to school. It was like chapter 8 in management class, you know, that was about it. So I knew enough not to get sued, but that was about it. And so I come out of school and I go to this employer and they're like, here's this interview guide. This is going to help you pick the best talent. And it was like this 27 page document with a behavioral based, you know, like they had the STAR method literally in the guide. And then they had like all these like probing questions that you were allowed to ask. And they said, just don't go off script. And I'm like, but they had a script of like questions to build rapport, but you couldn't go off script. And so it was like you would interview somebody and then they would like rate you on like, if you were like not robotic in your interview question. And you know what that did? It just completely neutered the entire interview experience. You know, you never made any human connection, but that was the way it worked, right? And that was allegedly the best way to hire talent. A few years into it, I thought better of it, and I'm like, does this actually work, right? And the answer was, well, no, because if you looked at the turnover numbers, we were losing 40% of those people in the first 3 years on the job. So something's not working.
Well, you know, it's also, so let's be fair too. And this is where I get a little provocative and I catch a lot of heat in the industry, but it's because I do try and tell the truth. There are certain processes that are good for hiring workers. And then there are processors that are game changers. And that's who you attract in the game changers. And every hierarchy in every organization has its cohort of workers, has its cohort of mezzanine performers, and then it has its cohort of game changers. And there's something called Price's Law. And your readers or your listeners would be interested in this. So Price's Law is the square root of the number of people in your organization do 50% of the work. Hmm. And when you hire, you should always be playing to the square root number for Price's Law, no matter what role you are looking to fill. So as an example, and this is scary, if you're a four-person company, that means two people are doing 50% of the work. That's not a big deal. If you're a 36-person company, six people are doing 50% of the work, right? The other 30 are doing workers' work. If you're 100 people, it starts to get scary. 10 people are doing 50% of the work. The other 90 are doing workers' work. But if you drive yourself with your processes and even consider some of the things we've just chatted about in the first half of this session, and you drive your processes to address the Price's Law and throw it out of balance, you can change the face of your organization. But it requires a number of things. It requires making sure that you put HR in a winning scenario. HR are not here to find talent. HR was plugged into this 50 years ago to take care of the existing employees. No HR people have been trained how to invasively and aggressively gone out and attract the top 1% of the players in your respective industry. Because if they were, they would have been given by the C-suite enough money to be courting the top 100 people in your industry. You could do that digitally today and be pounding them in a respectful way every single week with information about your company that eventually has them lean in. I will guarantee you not a single listener of yours has got a $50,000 or $100,000 budget if they've got over $10 million in sales to go after the top 100 identified people in your competitive marketplace as a steady state basis and try and get them today or 3 years from now as a team member. And that list should be evaluated every year and you should elegantly be touching base with them and saying, hey, would you mind if we stayed in touch? We don't have anything today, but we believe this is who you could become if you came to us and just spent 3 years here. And here's the upside to you. And listen, if you ever want to chat, do me a favor, keep an eye on our LinkedIn profile from a company. And by the way, feel free to reach out to me at any time. You get 3 to 5 of those 100 hires over a few year period, it changes the game dramatically.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. No, I don't have that today. But, you know, on your comment on, you know, an HR person aggressively attracting, you know, that top 1%, the honest answer is, I mean, I just admitted to you, you know, no, I wasn't trained on how to do this. And I think, you know, as you mentioned that, you know, to me, it's like, well, yeah, that's why I hire a headhunter, right? Like somebody that can shake the trees, and they have, you know, they have these relationships built up. But then in the same context, I'm also thinking, yeah, but part of the biggest challenge of using a third-party recruiter is getting them and the candidate to understand, you know, what you've already described, which is, who will that person become? What is the value to that person? Like, what is, like, it's a sales job at that point, right? And it's really
facilitator's
kind of
job. No, it's a facilitator's job. So it's not a sales job. And I will be nuanced about that. So our best clients are required to spend time with us. And one of the first, we ask two questions that have to be answered. One is, what is the problem you're trying to solve with this role? And the second is, who will this person potentially become when they leave there in 4 years? And nearly every person who's not accustomed to getting both of those questions is dumbfounded when I ask them. Mm-hmm. But when they think about it and we explain why those are important, suddenly the lights start going off. And then what happens there is I get a better messaging set from that client and each of the respective hiring managers that are involved in that hiring process who go, huh, I've never thought about it that way. I'm like, well, gosh, yeah. So it's really important that you understand we have a role as a facilitator. You cannot talk somebody into taking a job or a good person into taking a job because you have retention issues, right? It's like I call it the timeshare sell, right? If you live down here in Florida, they take you down to Bahamas, give you a Bahama swizzle, get you drunk, get you to buy a condo you can go to 3 times a year. You get home and you're like, WTF, did we just buy? And so it's the same thing a lot of times in the hiring process is they talk people into things rather than facilitate a decision in an elegant fashion.
That's an important distinction. I won't argue with that. I've seen that, you know, and the way I think about it is it's like, you know, it goes back to the whole idea of a realistic job preview. I mean, if you're trying to bring someone in and they're going to have to clean toilets in a retail store, you better not tell them that they're going to be in an executive level position and, you know, they're going to have a lot of people that report to them and get to make, you know, high level strategic decisions, but go clean that toilet. Mm-hmm. No, when I tell you, right? Like they've got to understand, they've got to understand what they're signing up for. And the good ones won't. The people who are desperate will do whatever you ask them to do.
Well, who the hell wants to hire a desperate person? This comes back to the interviewing and hiring for workers versus game changers, right?
Right, right. Yeah, that's a great point. So, all right, I got it. Noted. I won't call you a salesperson.
Well, most headhunters are salespeople. The great ones are facilitators and educators.
There you go. So the key, for all you HR people out there, the key is to identify the difference, right? And find the partners that work. And I've worked with a number of recruiters over the years. I've been very fortunate to find, you know, a handful that fit that mold, you know, that they're there for the relationship, for the long-term success. And they know if I just plug a gap in an organization with no thought for what the culture has to provide or what that person's really looking for, and I have turnover issues, eventually, you know, this relationship will deteriorate.
You know, we've been noodling for a couple of years now of saying, you can give us 25% first year earnings on the fee, or how about this? You give me 35% if they're there for 4 years.
Mm.
And then you start to adjust your fee, and now you collect your fee. And for most search firms, that type of annuity is very interesting if you really will put your work behind your mouth. And if you say, okay, so you're going to pay me over 4 years, 35% divided by four, and you're going to give me that percentage every year that they're there. I'm willing to bet on that if you are. That's where you have aligned interests. Right now, the search business does not have aligned interests. It is, thank you very much, 30 days, got my guarantee. I really don't care what happens to that person.
I love that. You know, I'm usually the guy that's like, is 45-day guarantee the best you can do? I want at least 6 months, you know, but
well, the problem there though is you can't hold a recruiter liable for what they can't control. Right. So if all of a sudden you go to a 35% fee, but you're just deferring your money, and then you give me the opportunity to stay engaged with that individual so I can call in every quarter and be, okay, Sally, how's it going? What's going on? Anything I can help you with? Right. Now I have a vested interest in making sure in the beginning of the process, but then my pay is determined on how long I keep Sally there with your help. And now you've got an ear and a voice to Sally because I have a vested interest. That's a model that I believe is going to have legs, because if you play the long game, an organization would be more than happy to pay almost double the search fee if they knew that it was tied to 4-year tenure at a company.
100%. Yeah, I sign up on that all day long. That's a simple ROI.
No-brainer.
That's a no-brainer.
And Absolutely. A search firm could double its fees with the same amount of work.
There you go. I love that. And from the customer standpoint, it's like, I mean, you just talk about interest being aligned. Like you just told HR, we're going to help you with retention issues. You pay a little bit more up front, but we're going to help you in the long run. And like,
you happen to pay twice of it, because odds are you're going to probably have to replace it. And when you have to replace somebody, we all know the math on that. By the time the downtime, cohesion of the team, right, esprit de corps, all that stuff.
Yeah, we ran that, you know, at a former company, we ran that analysis for the organization, and we used a really really conservative estimate on how much turnover cost us. I mean, like probably ultra conservative. The accountant signed off on it, if that tells you anything. Mm-hmm. And that number was still like $20 million. it's huge. And that doesn't even take into account the morale issues and the headaches and those that top 1% that eventually gets just burned out because the 10 people are doing the work for, you know,
100.
And that happens. And those are the warning signs. And I think that's one of the things that, as we talk about like the great resignation, is those people that are doing the majority of the work, one of those leaves, the whole thing can come crashing down, right?
Absolutely. And the headhunter should be happy to be engaged for maybe twice the fee over 4 years, because the headhunter then gets to stay engaged with the company and with the hiring manager and has line of sight into HR with a report to the HR person 3 or 4 times a year. And now all of a sudden you're picking up other JOs and opportunities that HR is like, you know what, Carl, you did such a good job and you're connected and you really do get us. I got these 3 other searches. And so everybody gets their interests aligned there.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. So I do want to talk about one more topic that, it's definitely a hot topic right now. I just saw something in the news, something like 6% inflation, you know, wage inflation is through the roof. We're like looking at our merit budget. And we're like, yeah, I don't know that a 3%, merit increase budget's necessarily going to keep us up with the market. So, you know, companies are facing this issue right now. And I had a conversation with somebody who was preparing a job offer the other day, and they had an offer in mind, and the candidate came back and was not on the same page. And, so this hiring manager came to me and said, you know, what do we do? And I said, well, do you want this person to work here? Yeah. Well, then you probably have to pay it. So that's one tactic to get candidates is, you know, pay to play, if you will. But, you know, I want to kind of pick your brain a little bit on, you know, what does a good offer look like? And as that part of that process, and as we're seeing some of this noise in the candidate market, you know, what are you seeing that works?
Yeah, so this is by far the most effective. HR people, get your pencils and pens and crayons out. This is by far the most effective way. First of all, start early and often with offer discussions. In some states, Massachusetts, California, you're not allowed to purportedly ask what the current salary is, which is the most ridiculous law of all time, but we won't go there in this session because it actually ends up costing you more money, both parties. When you start, once you get a candidate in the slot, and let's call in the slot for this conversation, you're starting the face-to-face. You had a TI, a telephone interview, or a Zoom, and now the candidate's in the slot. Or if you hire virtually and you're not in person, the very first time you appear either two-dimensionally or three-dimensionally in front of each other, and you say, Fred, all right, look, really thought this went extraordinarily well. Want you to think about it, want you to come back to us. It's a little early, Fred, in the conventional mindset to be talking about an offer at this point. But let me tell you, in our organization, we know everybody has different needs at different times in their lives. So what we've got is we've got a number of levers that we can pull. I got to tell you up front, Fred, I don't have all 10s on my levers, but I have a combo thereof. I've got base salary, I've got sign-on, I've got options, I've got RSUs, I've got vacation time, I've got relocation budget, and I've got those levers to pull. As we go through this process, I'm going to want to chat with you along the way every time we finish one of these gates. I can give you the ranges on all those, by the way. Sign on, we can go up to 10% of base salary. Our bonus is anywhere from 20 to 30%. The base on this is 120 to 140. The relo on this is 25 grossed up. You get the idea. And the options are 1,000. I can't pull all 10s on those levers, but I can pull a combination thereof. I don't know what your personal needs are, and I don't need to, whatever you want to share with me. But as we go along, I want to be able to pull the right levers for you. So, boom. When that guy or girl hangs up the phone there, first of all, their mind is blown that this is a collaborative process rather than a jack-in-the-box at the end of the process, you know, pops up and here's your offer, right?
Right.
Right. And so that tactic right there has worked extraordinarily well for our clients.
You know what you just gave me? You just gave me like a menu, right? Like now I have a choice. Yeah. And that's what's so genius about that approach is it's like, you know, usually you're just thinking, you know, what's the base? What's a vacation? Is there a bonus? Right. As opposed to what are the levers? So I really like that. And you're also setting expectations that you're not going to get the world. You're going to get a combination that fits your individual needs. Mm-hmm. The other thing, I mean, I agree with you, first of all, on the compensation, I ask it in the first phone discussion. And unfortunately, what I found, especially working with third-party recruiters, is a lot of times they'll tell me that this person will take what's in the salary range. But when you talk to that person, they're like, oh, no, I told them 150. You're talking 115? No, I need one. You know, like, I mean, I've been there. And the last thing you want is for that to happen in the last interview. Or, God forbid, when you extend an offer. But, you know, setting that expectation right up front and just, you know, even just asking what somebody needs is also just building a connection. It's building some adult respect and a relationship with somebody that you're going to be transparent and authentic through the process. And that's, I mean, I've heard that feedback more times than not is people just like it when everybody's up front. Mm-hmm. So I love that. So hopefully, you know, I got my big green crayon out. I wrote that down on a post-it note. You know, we're good to go. So
use it. Let me know how it works out.
Sounds good. Well, it's been just an absolutely wonderful conversation. We're ending the time here together, but I do want to go through the Rebel HR flash round. So we got three questions we ask every guest, and I'm curious to hear your responses. You ready to go?
Let's do it.
All right. Question number one: what is your favorite people book?
My favorite people book is Bob Cialdini influence.
Got it. All right. Question number two. Who should we be listening to?
Jordan Peterson.
Jordan Peterson. What does Jordan do?
Jordan Peterson is probably one of the world's premier psychologists, in my opinion, and public speakers. He's Canadian, PhD. Give yourself one straight month of Jordan on YouTube, and you will never think the same.
I love that. Yeah, and that's one of the things, you know, as an HR practitioner, so much of the job can be very, very gray, very difficult, very hard. If you forget that you're dealing with humans, i.e., you're just dealing with a series of brains. So if you can understand how the brain works and understand psychology a little bit, it just makes your life easier. So, all right, I got it on my list. I'll queue it up. Jordan Peterson. Perfect. Thank you. All right, hard-hitting question here. How can our listeners connect with you?
Oh, gosh, that's an easy one. So Joe Mullings on LinkedIn, joemullings.com is my webpage. And those are, and then by the way, so I told you we're an unconventional HR company or headhunting company. We also have a docuseries called TrueFuture.tv. It's an award-winning, Telly award-winning docuseries. So no other search firm has a production studio and a production team and its own docuseries. We've got one. So check out TrueFuture.tv and then check out joemullings.com and Joe Mullings on LinkedIn.
Awesome. We will have all that information in the show notes. So open up your podcast player, check it out, click in, get connected. You know, I just think the content, just this discussion today, you know, the maybe challenging some of the paradigms of how we think about recruiting and human resources and business in general. It's worth a follow. It's worth checking out. And so really appreciate the time here today, Joe, and appreciate the work. Keep pushing the boundaries.
Always will, and appreciate sharing with your audience. Thanks very much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
You're well.
All right, that does it for the Rebel HR podcast. Big thank you to our guests. Follow us on Facebook at Rebel HR Podcast, Twitter at Rebel HR Guy, or see our website at rebelhumanresources.com. The views and opinions expressed by Rebel HR Podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any of the organizations that we represent. No animals were harmed during the filming of this podcast. Baby.